Hello.
Haley, yeah, go ahead.
I
don't have a lot of time today, but go ahead, whatever, what you want to
do. No, I just wanted to say that it was very rare that you would ever see those photographs anywhere, even on the internet. And there's a, I think a website called Mafia Today. That's all run by them. That's how powerful they've become. Cops are killed. Cops don't give the information. They, even in New York State, I think it was Conley, his name was, a cop during the Whitey Bulger trial, came out that he was feeding all the information from the FBI. This is an FBI, you know, authority figure giving information to the mob. This is the way they run the whole world, and the, who runs it is the Jew mob. Jew mob. I can't say any different from you know, who the Rothschilds are. It's just a huge Ponzi scheme. They push their weight around, make everyone jump, right, as if there's a threat in the latest to Syria. It's all to do with the war games. So when I had beseeched at a young age, trying to, you know, save my own life and my family's life, police weren't there for me. They weren't for any of these children. So the way I see it is I'm a spokesperson for all these children that were mutilated and all these unsolved crimes. I mean, I dare these people. After I called the police force, like in York Regional Police, the guy retires. The guy retires. Then I get that Mike Amato telling me to go to the FBI. The other, I think his name is, let me see, it was Amato Gauci, who's ahead of the ahead of the cold case. And I said, look, I'm going to clean up your files. He starts yelling at me, I need my job. I need to feed my children. They don't want these things solved. Can you imagine? I'm getting threats from the police force when I went in into the headquarters there with Detective Sergeant Tony Smith. Why did three cops come down to intimidate me? Why did they do that? They told me I wasn't scared enough. So that means our whole police force is a sham. It always has been. It's just grown larger and larger where they... cartels from Colombia and Mexico all work in sync with the street gangs. That's how horrific it's become. And, you know, when I was a kid, you'd see maybe kids taking marijuana or LSD or something like that. But now it's every time of methamphetamine, crack, you know, things that'll fry your brain. And who runs all these discos? I was trying to make a mark in the 80s working with head of intelligence at Ron Sandelli. He gave up. He retired from intelligence because he tried to make a move against the corrupt cops that were taking the bribes from the organized crime, meaning the comisos. They all run the entertainment section here in Toronto. And there was a long, lengthy trial with officers that were charged with taking the dope off drug dealers and selling it themselves and taking the money off of these dealers. This is what's the true story, and they didn't get any time at all, not even, I don't think, a home time. It's a joke. It's a huge joke. It's so sick, so diabolical, I can't even think about it. But anyway, I won't get back into that thing another day, but I just wanted to show you that York Regional. I'll just go into the York Regional cold cases so you know, because I want to link the Tobinski in with the Martin Luther King. Let me just put York Regional. Give me a second here because I'm holding the phone, York Regional Police cold case. So if you just put into your Google search or whatever, you put York Regional Police cold cases, and it's the first York regional.
I got it.
Police cold cases. And the first thing that pops up, it says cold case files, WWYRP.ca cold cases. So hit on that and go in there. And I'll just explain the first one. I was trying to solve. Why doesn't it? Okay, here. Just needed a bit of time, I think. Starts there with the William Ashley.
This is interesting because they even have photographs of the deceased.
Exactly. So this is what's important. Now, here's the first one is Tobinski did it, Walter Tobinski. William Nash, we used to go by it going to the Estonian children's camp, and we talk about this thing all the time. He had killed this William Edward Nash with, again, the tire iron, because on his skull there, and all over the forehead was marks with a crescent shape, which was the tire iron. Anyway, he did a robbery, but what he left was a very interesting shoe print. One boot print or shoe print larger than another. Well, what was that Martin Luther King's crime scene underneath that, what do you call it, that... it was like a small little... other than being a rooming house, right, at the back of the rooming house, there was a small run. I don't have the information in front of me or whatever. But anyway, what happened is I yelled to William Pepper, the lawyer for Sirhan, because he was also the lawyer for Jane Searle Ray. I said, look, you've even got Tobinski's picture in one of your stupid photographs. He's tramping all around, and what was left was shoe prints with one boot size larger than another. And he's casing the joint. It says underneath your picture, NSA, man or NSA operative or whatever, looking for shell casings. He's picking up his own shell casings, for God's sakes. Anyway, that was the first one here. I wanted to see that William Nash thing. Now, in my affidavit...
Why did he kill William Nash?
This William Nash?
Why did he kill him?
This William Nash guy, the first one?
Yeah.
It was a robbery, but before that, I went into the history of this William Nash, because that what he had done was participated in some other... extortion, and I've gone into detail into the years before, like in the history of William Nash, of what he did. But anyway, he just died of this blunt force trauma, and that was on Sunday, June the 24th, 1956. So every time we went up, to the Estonian children's camp, we'd go by this joint, this W.E. Nash snack bar, and we talk about the same story. It's become folklore. Now, when I went over yesterday, I was starting to talk about that Clyde, when he went in for his hernia operation at the Scholdeis Clinic, started talking about these murders that he had done. But anyway, he brought me that day. I don't have the map because I've done a map where from the Scholdeis Clinic where he took me to show me where all these cadavers were. So the first one he took me to, it's a bit down the ways, was this Tracy Kundinger, but I won't get there. And when he was up at that area, remember I told you Marie Woods, what I talked about Marie Woods, her station wagon was found at the Scarborough Town Center. That was that same area. Anyway, he takes me. The next one is Geraldine Pickford.
Are you telling me all the cold cases here were done by Clyde or by Walter?
No, this was done by Clyde. The first one was only done by Walter. See that
right
there?
Yeah.
Okay, these were the subsequent ones are done by Clyde, where he killed this Geraldine Pickford. Now, he took me to, like, after he took me to the Tracy Kundinger, Marie Woods and a few others that way. Then he cut across the city to Young Street, way at the top of where the St. Andrews College was. So he took me into the grounds where this Tannery Creek was, and this woman was found her body right over, like he showed me, right this sort of small little creek area. So he strangled her, this old lady, or well, older to him, because this is 1965. She was 41 and found there. She was employed at this college. So
Why did he kill her?
So some of these cases were basically just done for no other reason that he went, looking for people to kill. A lot of them were hits that were done with somebody wanting to off, but this was just, this one was just one of these thrill kills as far as he...
Yeah, she doesn't mean to anybody significant or didn't pose any threat to him or whatever.
No, for nothing. But what he would do, like, at times when he was driving me home from Mississauga area, and he'd see a woman jogging or on a bike, and she's by herself, that used to make him go crazy. Oh, I gotta get her. I gotta leave you now. I'm gonna just throw you here on the street, and I gotta get this woman, you know. So he just targeted whatever was vulnerable. And especially if the woman was jogging it already at nighttime, that's where I'm going over all of these cases. Now, this one was when I was speaking to Mike Agouchi or whatever. I told him it's rather lengthy just to do your cold cases here. But Isabel Brooks, they never did find her. But Clyde, on taking me that same day, showed me where he had put this Isabel Brooks's body, but he brought me up to the Debbie Silverstein, the dump site where he dropped her, and the Christine Jessup. That was in that same area, and it's like town of Markham, Concession Road around Highway 7. So what I did was, having this Google map has tremendously helped me, because I don't have a car. And I can't, get to where he brought me, but I sure did it with the Google map. I would just go into the areas where we went by car and just kept, scrolling with my finger, because you become the car as you're driving down the highway. And this is the way I'm actually plotting where all of these bodies were dumped by where he had showed me. So usually what he picked was a river area, like a bridge, and he'd throw the body over the into the river, and it would just float away. No one would find these are very remote areas. So she was just walking. Here's another one. She was just walking by herself in this at that time in 1972, that was quite a remote area where she was walking by herself. So when she had left her residence, no one ever saw her again. So they know it's a murder. But anyway, I yelled to Clyde, show me everyone, just in the York Regional. Because when the cold case squad opened it up again, and I think it was 19 or whatever, 98 or whatever, they started opening up all these old cases because of DNA. They were trying to link it through the London police area to the Windsor to, Edmonton or whatever, seeing if they can clean up some of these cases. Now, Ingrid Bauer was another one that never was found, and he took me that day, and I thought he'd kill me right where he had dumped Ingrid Bauer's body. So it's right near Kleinberg, and then where he took me to show me where he had grabbed her, the Ingrid Bauer, on Penn Road. He just went around that area to where it was a remote little dead-end road. Now, the day he took me in there, I'll never forget, because he wanted me to come out of the car. Hadn't it been for somebody that came into that remote area where there was a bridge again, I would have been a goner that day when he was just showing me these places, because I think what he was doing was just reliving his murder. So Ingrid Bauer's never been seen again, but this is where I want to take the cold case, Mikamoto Gucci or whatever, Gucci, how to pronounce his name. Now, here is a poor girl, Yvonne LaRue, who asked police to help her.
These are all Clyde murders.
Yes, now, subsequent from here. Yvonne LaRue begged the police to help her. He brought me again. This was another day that he took me and brought me to see where he had dumped Yvonne LaRue's body. And it's right near the Kiel and Jane area in a side road. Now, on the side road, what he did was he just dumped her right in that area known as Finch. That's where she was last seen, but he grabbed her from York Finch General Hospital. So he showed me where all of these places where he picked these women up. He brought me to that York Finch General Hospital and then showed me where he had dumped her body. So I plotted these all, all these murders. And she, what was so important was Yvonne LaRue was supposed to testify. And she asked police's cooperation to protect her. Well, they didn't protect her. They didn't protect her.
What was she supposed to testify about?
About drug dealers and the Camisos and how she was involved. All goes back to the stupid friggin' Camiso family. So she died of blunt force trauma. So he would use usually a tire iron or what he called his killing stick. It was a sort of like a billy club that the cops carry. But this special killing stick, as he had it, had a metal rod going in there, so it would just club you to death. So when he took me up one north, he put the killing stick in the sleeve, and I said, what do you need that for? You know, you're going to smash my brains in like everyone else? Hadn't a helicopter swooped down. I was another day that he was, like, wanting to knock me off. Now, here's the girl that was killed by Clyde in a hit and run. I talked about that yesterday. That was Tuesday, February the 6th, 1973, Sherry Blundell. And she had just got out of the car, and Clyde saw, the girl was by herself, and boom, just plowed into her and took off. The girl that was stunned, saw the car that he had, and this is what's so important. Of all the cars that he did have, in particular, he had this Ford, and with the Cindy Williams case, the little girl that he had picked up in Hamilton, relates to, the cars that he had. The Ford that he had, he said, had paint, primer paint on it. So this is how I'm linking them all in, but what's difficult is the fact that I have to marry all these cases, like I said, from the Hamilton area, that's the Halton area, the Windsor police, the Montreal police, the Quebec police, the Edmonton police. It's a mammoth job. I've never had such an undertaking. That's why I've worked on it now since 2000 when I started taping him as soon as I called him. And it's I'm still working on it. It's like 13 years. This is the history of organized crime that I'm doing. I'll tell you that. Anyway, here's the little girl. The next one, Sherry Hansen. Her body hasn't been found, and she's the little Red Riding Hood that was walking, by herself. She was going to a relative, and Clyde said he saw her walking by herself. Parent, allowed children to move in this rural areas by herself, and she was easy picking. So he showed me approximately where he had taken her off. It was like near a kind of a school, this Blue Hills Academy, where he showed me on Bloomington Side Road. So I plotted from where he had abducted her to where approximately her body is. So they've never found her body, the Cheryl Hansen, 1974. Now, what's so important with this 1974, it has links to the Cindy Williams case in the Hamilton area where he had abducted that. Within about a month, he started picking these little kids up, right? And it all precipitated him when I came and brought the cherries and grapes to him, giving them, you know, like I said, well, you have to, when your hernia operation, you have to be having, you know, your intestines working and don't hit on heavy steak and potatoes or whatever. You need fruit. So I brought it. I don't have much money, but I spent about $10 on these expensive cherries and grapes. And for some odd reason, he started talking, little girl want a candy, which made me go ballistic when he told me that. Anyway, the day that he started taking me to the Yvonne LaRue site, the one that he started with was Diane Singh, this girl, and where he abducted her was right at this Becker store at Jane and Woolner. And what was so important is that day Clyde took me by Walter Tobinski's house, which is right near this Jane and Woolner, saying, you know, waving to Tobinski, well, I'm going to now show her, you know, sites, where I dump these people. Make him reminisce, but what he's doing is taking me to my death. Hadn't it been for that day with this Ingrid Bauer case, where he took me down this dead-end road, a car showed up. He forgot about it, you know. He thought, I'm not going to be caught with someone actually taking my license plate. But he wanted to dump me where he had put Ingrid Bauer. So Diane Singh is where he had started, plotted from that Jane and Woolner, and she had been hitchhiking, for, you know, put her thumb out, and easy picking again. This is who he targeted.
But he's just doing these murders out of sadistic glee? Just because he enjoys murdering people?
That's right. He's like, it's in his blood. If he sees somebody dangling, walking by themselves, he's got to kill them. It's like in his blood. Two, like I said, how many have you done? And two, he said. First I started with 10, then I went 20, then I went 50, 100. Stop me when I'm getting warm. You know, let's play colder, hotter. We used to do that when we were kids. You know, you hide something and then the child is going and, you know, whatever's hidden if you're colder or warmer. That's what I did when I started saying, well, how many then, please? So I'm going to like 100, 200, 300. Holy Christ, I'm going, you know, like I went ballistic. Like, where does it end? And then finally, with this low voice, he said, two. I said, what do you mean two? He said, at least two a month, if not two a week. Holy Christ, I went nuts. So this is what I tried to go over. All of the cases, people have gone missing. Bodies have never been identified.
How many people know you're working on this?
Well, Detective Ryan, when I told him, and I think Mike Amato, Gauci, and Mike Amato, the head of intelligence at York, I think they know that I told him it's going to take me a bit of time, but I said I'll do area by area. And then, you know, every time I see this Steve Ryan come on with his cold case, that's why I press leaving messages with him. I mean, why put your stupid email number and your phone number? Call if you don't have any information. Call me.
Do you have a calling card or something you can use from a payphone or something like that?
No, I don't have. But I was thinking what I have to do is, what's bothering me is I'm getting, as soon as you call me or whatever, all of a sudden I get that, you know, who wanted to place a bomb, you know where. And just when I put my battery, lithium battery, back in the phone, boom, you know, they're calling me. Now, I feel that the bomb guy is working with Clyde, you know, because they want to find where I am at any particular time. I didn't go out today after you started going ballistic, don't go out. I look out, what is there? some a creepy guy I've never seen before tying his shoelaces right in front of our house on a chair. Holy Christ, I said, well, I'm not going out today again. You know, like, I never know. Can you imagine? I've had, like, incarceration all my life because I've been too scared to go to school, too scared to take, a trip just to the library or whatever. I've been cased all my life. So many attempts of Clyde trying to drive me over on the sidewalk on a hit and run, cutting our axle of our car, coming in public in the Hazleton lanes there, trying to shoot me right in public there. But I yelled out loud, and everyone, there must have been about 50 people around that immediate area. I yelled, put my hands up, go for it! I yelled to him like that. I was on an escalator. He was at the base of the escalator, took out his gun, looked first around, and I yelled out that, what he had done was he synced it in with the video cameras not working that day in that very expensive Hazleton Lanes. It's one of the...
Was he aiming it at you?
Yeah.
He was
my hand was shaking when I got...
He was going to kill you right then and there?
Right there and then, because that's the day he came, the day after I started, when I did that. I think I either did it with Lenny, the Cloak and Dagger, still. Oh, I wanted to tell you, I wanted to tell Lenny Bloom, as he calls himself. He all got that name from that movie where the character is Lenny Bloom there, Enemy of the State, I think it's called, which everyone should watch again.
Yeah, I love the movie.
Again.
Lenny Bloom, there's a Lenny Bloom character in there? That's not.
Yeah,
that's not,
where he picked it up from.
That's not Gene Hackman. Lenny, that's not Gene Hackman, is it?
No, it's Enemy of the State. It's,
I know, that stars Gene Hackman with Will Smith.
Actually, he's in there, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, everyone has to look at that maybe 10 times to get the drift of it. But that's where Nelson Thal thought of the name of Lenny Bloom, because, like I told you, he started wiretapping the White House. Calls me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, high on his cocaine, and he said, Lenny says, do you want to listen to what's going on in the White House? I got a black guy that's... working, as one of those waiters in the White House, and we've got it all tape recording of what they're talking about at the dinner table. And he did this with Jonathan Pollard. The Jews are all wanting to let Pollard go. And what they wanted to do, one of the Jew newspapers here, they wanted to make Israel another state of the United States. Are you kidding me? I couldn't believe, anywhere. That's where he got the idea of Lenny Bloom. That's very important. Now, here's where he started. Here's this Tracy Kundinger girl. And he said that she used to come on his streetcar. This young girl.
What a nice-looking young girl.
Yeah. And she was working at this 650 Parliament Street at this indoor... pool. This is where he said he had actually met his third wife, who's dead, on Parliament Street, the same street as where he saw her and dropped her off at Parliament. And then she was...
Was this person who was described as getting off the bus with her? That could that have been Clyde?
Yeah, what happened was he found out, because he talked with her time and again, but stalked her all the way to where she was, and she got off at this Don Mills and Steele's bus. So what I did was I plotted by map where he said and showed me, because from Schuldice, this was the first where he had shown me. She had to cross this a very remote area, like a school, grassy area, and she was by herself. So here's another...
Why'd he kill her?
Just another thrill kill.
Jesus Christ.
This is so sick. This is so sick. And I was trying at the age of 10, to get that little boy in our backyard. I'll never forget Gary Morris, one ear that stuck out like 45-degree angle at his head, you know, at his side of his head. It stalked this kid, brought the kid into our backyard. I'm swinging on the, you know, back swing with my sister, and he brought this kid in with a fishing rod, luring the kid that they're going to kill pigeons and they're going to go fishing to Lake Ontario. Brings the kid in, and then Clyde says to me, "You got to leave. This is for boys only." Then this kid, because he was sort of what I found mentally retarded or slow, but very gregarious. I started staring at him. I shouldn't have, because of the ear, because the ear, you know, there was one ear just stuck out a 45, the other one was fine. But he was just babbling, you know, "Yeah, this is only for boys, because we're going to kill pigeons with the paper clips here." So I went in, you know, to play with my doll. Brought my sister up. She was just a baby, like about a, this was 56. My sister was born in 54. So she was just, I can't even calculate at that time. But anyway, just a small child. And I was left babysitting. So here I was with this crazy Clyde coming in our backyard, bringing this kid in. And the next thing I know, I hear, the kid is screaming at the top of his lungs, "Help." And I look out my bedroom window and I see Clyde jumping up and down on this kid's back, shoving leaves or something down his throat. And the kid is like, his cries become muffled. And I got so panic-stricken, I got to save this kid. So I went rushing down into our backyard. And lo and behold, I thought, where the hell, you know, by the time I got, you know, from the second floor down, I thought, where the heck he went, you know, where did he go? I just, saw him from my bedroom window. But then I started looking, and I saw, like, drag marks. So he had pulled the child to the other side of the fence, like the door. So I looked and what they were doing, and I looked at this great big slingshot and all these paper clips, and I remember picking up the paper clips, then wanting to take the slingshot, and I thought, no, I better leave it here. Fishing rod was still there, and I thought, what the heck? So this is what I did. I went quietly into the kitchen, looked out the window, and I thought, oh my God, now I see him. From the kitchen window, I could see where he dragged him. To the to the side there. So what I did was, by myself, I go out to the front of the house, but I look through the living room window, and then I see that the kid is sort of still, but I thought maybe he's still alive or whatever. I better go and help him. So stupidly, I went through the front of our house at 45 Marlboro, through a very narrow little passage between the two houses. And you can see the passageway if you Google just 45 Marlboro Street, spelled Marlborough, I think, Avenue, Toronto, Ontario, 45. And you can see that place where we lived. Anyway, I went down the passageway. Little did I know that he must have,
I'll call you back.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. That was another call. That was on my side.
Anyway, what happened was he was waiting at the end of that little narrow passageway there. In ambush. So I got there, saw the body. I went towards the body, but lo and behold, Clyde jumped out from nowhere, like at the side of the building there, and jumped and started doing the same thing that I'd seen him do to the kid. Started jumping up and down my back, right where, like, your liver kidney area is, and trying to, knock the living bejesus out of me.
He was going to kill you.
He was going to kill me. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So anyway, what happened is he started pulverizing my head, you know, smashing it against the ground. And he left me stunned. Anyway, what he did was he dragged me down that passageway. He left the bike at the front of our house, put me, over, the boys' bike has got, what do you call that bar? That bar?
Yeah.
Anyway, put me over the bar and started pedaling like mad up the street towards Yonge Street from Marlboro.
You mean he was taking your body? He was taking you on the bike?
Yeah.
Pedaling
and anyway,
with you across,
what,
yeah, go ahead.
What happened was because of the jolting of the bike, because I was sort of half-assed on it,
yeah.
I was coming, regaining consciousness, and all of a sudden when I saw where I was, because the bar was right in my stomach, which is hurting
yeah.
me, right?
Yeah, sure.
He's trying to hold me and pedal, and I started screaming and fighting and kicking and whatever I possibly could, and then I dropped off the bike almost at Yonge. And
he
there was a lot of people.
I would have thought he would have lost control of the bike.
No, he didn't. I mean, he knew. I mean, I was just a small little skinny. You've got to see the picture of how skinny and small I was, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to fighting this. It's a demon that has the strength beyond. Because I watched as he took on Alfred and Clyde Jr., the oldest from the third marriage. Two of them, and he was able to overtake these two. I can't believe the adrenaline or what demon that lives in his soul, that he's got the strength of when you see these crazy Hollywood films about the demon having so much power, that Clyde has. Anyway, what happened was I started screaming, and when I got home, I locked our house door, and I shivered there because I left my sister. She was in the house by herself. My mother was working. My dad was out working. My brother, I don't know where he was, I think, doing his paper route or whatever. And when my dad came home, I brought my dad and scared as hell, shivering and shaking, brought him to show that little boy. He was dead. I was too scared to even go near. So my dad says he's dead, and they're going to blame it on our family. We've got to get this kid out of here.
So
my dad
for
didn't
God's
have a
sake. So your dad actually helped to cover up Clyde's crime?
That's right.
Oh my God.
Now what happened was this is what was horrific. He says we're immigrants here. They'll pin it on us or whatever. My dad was actually quite astute on this thing, because Clyde's cousin was a major operative already, and it would have been pinned on us. So my dad was off the rocker there.
We're getting some weird interference. Do you hear it?
Interference? Yeah, I can hear it. It's getting weird. Anyway, this is why I feel even the phone has been bugged and everything. But it's so horrific. That organized crime has just evolved from this stage of the game. Clyde had done quite a few murders. He had abducted this girl by the name of Margaret McRae. They pinned it on another kid before that. Clyde learned the astute way of pinning it on from Walter Tobinski, and this is where I've gone into the history, and that's why I want to get back to the web sleuths, because they don't. The Toronto Police don't even have the cold cases on their website. This is what pisses me right off. And this is what pissed off Donna Alcock's brother. What he had done is he put a sign, and he went before the OPP in his immediate area. He lives in the London, Ontario area. And he placarded his sister's name or whatever right in front of the OPP. Why is my sister's case not on your cold case list? Huh? And they said, stuttering and stammering. This is the girl that had the, what Clyde said, he put an orange garbage bag, shoved it down her throat. And what I've done is, plotted where he had shown me where he had brought her to this dam in London, Ontario, Fanshawe, whatever dam. It's a remote, dead end sort of road that goes right down to the falls. There's a dam area, in London, anywhere. One of these days, probably today you don't have all the time, but plotting how he took her from an area there. But anyway, he showed me that he had stalked her from her getting off on the streetcar all the time and just stalked her where she would go because he chatted her up regarding, you know, like Clyde would chat people up, and he now uses places like Plenty of Fish on sea, social media to stalk his victims.
Oh my God.
This is what he did. This is so sick. Anyway, I'll tell you, one day I think I saved a girl's life. Clyde looked at me and said, I've got a Filipino or whatever here on the internet. And I was watching, you know, what he was doing all the time on the internet or whatever, trying to stalk another victim. That's what he does. But anyway, he said to me, Haley, this person, this woman that I'm speaking to on the internet here wants me to say what race I am. How do you spell Caucasian? And I said to Alfred, I said, do you know how to spell it? And he says, well, you spell it, Haley, for Clyde. And I said, it's spelled Clyde, C-O-C-K, and then Asian, A-S-I-A. The girl didn't respond back. I hope she got the drift that it was a sexual maniac, Caucasian. He didn't even know. He didn't do his spell check. So I think I saved the girl just by...
Oh, that's amazing.
Jesus.
The one more on this list is Catherine Elizabeth McLaughlin. Was that also called?
Yeah, and that was another one, you know, that blunt force trauma. Picked her, a hooker. She was hooking there at Sherburn and Carlton. That he took me and showed me where he had left her body there at Warden and Town of Markham. So after... that Tracy Cundinger, he drove me to that Warden Avenue. Then he took me to Marie Wood, I think one or two others, and brought me down. Then he took me to the one that was the guy he picked up that worked at the St. Abbey's clinic. So he showed me approximately 10 in one day where he had killed and dropped the site. Anyway, he went back... to the Schultheis clinic, but he thought it was the perfect alibi. Oh no, he had an operation, and he brought me to a seedy bar. I said, what are you taking me to this crazy seedy looking bars for? He said, the seedier the better, because all these wasted, you know, broads that are hookers or whatever, they hang out, I gotta find another victim. So right after he has an operation, I can't believe how he didn't want to be put under, because he felt that they'd kill him on the operation table. So he came in with a 24-pack of beer. Can you imagine? Click, 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 click. Comes in there. No, you know what? If you answered that cellular phone, they can clue in, because that's what that Victor does. You think that you'll take the call, and then they click in with the three-way party line. Anyway, let's go back now. That was still to the front there with the cold case.
I don't think I can take much more of this. This is just overwhelming.
No, it's just, and then you just go on and on. Now, what I'm doing is going through, because they've got it nicely chronologically, and then you tap on cold cases 1981, 1995, and it goes into, oops.
I don't want to do any more. I don't want to do
it. Yeah, it's just, then there's that Marie Woods, the one I told you, St. John's Wood. And then that same time that he brought me to see that Ingrid Bauer, there was this Benita Tarantino. And the police have the audacity to say to me, hey, Leotis, you're not scared enough. Like, since how many years have you been working with the mob?
The police say that to you?
Yeah.
That sounds like they're working for Clyde.
Exactly. And that's why even Detective Ryan says, well, I'm going to see Clyde after, you know, 1 hour he spends with me. 1 hour writing what I had said to him on scrap pieces of paper. I almost told Detective Ryan, you might as well have written what I was saying on a piece of toilet paper. I wanted to yell it at him. I'm sure you're taping all this stuff, but you give me an hour and you've got all these cold cases you haven't dealt with. Anyway, the next one is this Tashado.
I can't go further, Haley. I can't go further.
The third one down from the last one is Francesco Califano. They even don't have the proper address. They've got 1089 Yonge Street, Thornhill. It's 7089. Yeah, you know what I want to yell to the police? Yeah, fucking cocksuckers. Pardon my language. From a little child that was so innocent, me, I had to learn to survive. I had to learn to walk the walk and, you know, talk the talk. And that's the way I was able to get all the shit that God ever told me, by laughing like he did, by talking like he did. And I get all the shit down because he thought maybe, because he said one day to me, you know, Haley, my wet dream is to have a woman that kills with me. And then when I finally, said one day, because every day that I went into that fucking house of his, I would call Adrian Humphreys from the National Post, the biggest crime writer other than my other friend, James Dubrow. And he would always say, Haley, when you get out of there, call me so I know you're alive. Because everyone was wanting to bat their heads over from the story of the fucking century. Fucking, pardon my language, I swear so bad. I swear so bad,
Haley,
but I'm so angry.
Haley, I understand. Jesus, do I understand.
You understand where, you know, when a child begs a cop to help her and there's nobody there to help her, that's a betrayal of betrayals. Jesus Christ, it's so sick. I want to just vomit at times, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I got to just pray that there's a reason that I've been left alive. There's got to be this end game where, you know, the innocent, the meek will survive, not these whatever. Anyway, it's just so overwhelming. We'll go over another day, but I won't send you what you told me. I want to send because I want you to see what I look like. You know, but I won't even do that because what I'm going to do is just change my phone number because it's been hacked into. Your site has been hacked into. The other one, the name I wanted to tell you that I found, Kurt Jester, CJ, is on the website. When I put all the, you know, that film with, comedian who played the Kurt Jester or the Court Jester. Mm-hmm. What was his name? He also played Mary Andrews. What was that actor's name? Anyway, that's what he is. He's a fool. He calls himself a fool. What was so important is he called a lot of these kids Mr. Johnson, because I said, well, you must have a decompartmentalized brain. So are you the three faces of Eve? How many characters do you have here? So I said, well, let's call the regular you that's working on the job Mr. Clyde. So I said, well, you're Mr. Clyde, you're Mr. Hyde, and whatever. What other characters do you have in there? And then he says, Mr. Johnson. And that's how he lured that poor Patricia Lubkin, and that's why they left me in the Scarborough area. Clyde put up a poster luring, kids, girls, by posing that, do you want to make extra money, need a babysitter. So all these little girls signed putting their phone number on this poster that he had set up. So he had asked me to come, but he didn't want to take it down. He had driven me underage into that area with my brother in the Scarborough area and asked me to remove it off this supermarket, bulletin board or whatever. Anyway, I had no money in my pocket, and Clyde abducted this little Patricia Lubkin. That's when all shit broke loose, and I... ended up having to walk home that night. Like I said, you know, Clyde said he killed his Ida Dean Jean, pinned it on this guy by the name of Brady. He was an epileptic. This same Brady guy didn't do any time, just went into a mental institute because he said he couldn't remember what happened. This epileptic was the same epileptic that was at the JFK assassination that was pulling an epileptic fit. Huh? Like, this is unbelievable. Anyway, what happened was the very important pieces of how and why and when is all chronological of how it evolved. So when I went in, finding that, what do you call it, the key at the top of my, you know, my brother's door, I begged the cop at the end of the street to help me. Please, please, I said. I went on bended knee to this cop on the street. Please help me. I've been, you know, I was witness to this kid, you know, being abducted. And you need to help me because every single day I've been threatened by bayonet, by machete, by guns at my head. They play Russian roulette and on. I need help. Well, the cop says to me, I can't get into your house to, you know, to you've got to show me yourself and bring the guns or whatever because I need to get a search warrant, you know. So when my mother came home, the two of us marched with some of the guns, and these were all the ones that were ordered or whatever, to the end of the Marlboro Street where the cop was. He was actually stationed there every single day because Clyde would do robberies at the same bank over and over again. They probably paid this cop off. Anyway, I ended up finding this guy, this cop by the name of Adolphus Payne. What a friggin' name. I'll never forget that. And I had said what transpired. And what he had done, he was another one that took the bribes. He had called Clyde's mother, whatever, and Clyde's mother had said, no, no, my son's not even in town. He's, you know, doing this salesman, door-to-door salesman, and he's up up north somewhere. Huh? That's all it went to. And I'm what I've been doing is to plan to show how many cases this Adolphus bastard Payne had gone into, and constantly these, you know, innocent victims, these children started disappearing and whatnot from that. What do you call this story of before he had done Gary Morris, he'd done a kid by the name of Wayne Millett, and this was a horrific killing. Again, he did the same way, bit the kid's neck and jumped up and down on his back again in the vital organs, left that kid down at the exhibition place there. Anyway, Clyde, one day when he was starting to reminisce about that killing, he had burst into the bathroom where I was on the pot, and he says, oh, shit, I love the smell of shit. It reminds me of that killing when I killed Wayne Millett. I was so worked up in adrenaline, I shit my own pants, and there were feces I left all over the, you know, the crime scene. My pieces of shit. This is a demented individual. It drove a streetcar for 30 years. It took its prey, these children, these teenagers. Can you imagine? And this three cops had the audacity to look me in the face and say, Haley Otis, you're not scared enough. Well, when I got home, I called Adrian Humphreys there at the National Post. He said, thank heaven, Haley, you didn't go ballistic, because my last words were, them, we'll see who's nuts here, who will win. That was my words. He says, look, Haley, you did right. You didn't say anything. You didn't. If they could have done anything to you. Adrian's words were, these guys are so diabolical. The people that we pay to serve and protect are not protected. And America's got to learn the cops are all in on it now because of the FEMA and all these Israelis to do their bidding. So you can't go and protest. Well, people have got to learn to override this thing. They might pull an EMP. I hope Kevin Barrett really, can get a group of people, but not going ballistic, to yell, like he said, we won't take it anymore, whatever Karen, Barrett wanted them to say. They've got it done it peacefully, because they can mow you down. They don't give a damn. And I didn't even go on the internet. When I was looking on the internet last night, I think in South America was either Venezuela or Brazil, 70% of the country is in no hydro. So maybe people are starting to protest here and there. Anyway, it's just diabolical. It's most all of the cold cases, and Clyde had told me, hey, Haley, they don't even have the right number in their cold cases. It's double that, he says to me. Double that, I said. So can you imagine? When I was doing all this stuff for the Toronto Police with, Ron Sandelli, for Special Agent Laurie Allen at the FBI headquarters in New Jersey there, I was doing stuff out of my pocket trying to get people to do something. They didn't want me to work on the Clyde's case. They wanted me to do money cases of fraud. I said, do you know that every friggin' Jew has got everyone's credit card numbers? And you're put on a list. You're put on a sucker list where they circulate your mother's maiden name. Well, how do they find it? You know what? It's right there on the internet. What I showed you, what was so important yesterday, was with the mother's maiden name. Well, it's there. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, wake up, America. Wake up. It's far too far gone.
I can't take anymore.
Yeah, anyway, have a great day. Yeah, it's just overwhelming.
You watch out, because you're living a very dangerous life.
No, it's unbelievable. Anyway, have a good night. Just keep on working on the articles. They're astounding.
Be careful.
I'm not going to go out today at all. But anyway, don't even. I don't even know. You tell me too. What am I to do with this thing? I'll try my best anyway. I know what you're trying to do is to wake up America, and I hope and pray that you, Kevin, and the group you will somehow get everyone to read that Veterans Today, get on mainstream somehow, and start getting people to listen and to wake up. They've got to wake up. Anyway, have a good night.
Yeah,
I'm going to make a salad and calm down. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Call me when you get a new phone.
Yeah, I will. Bye.
Be careful.